the North Peace MB Church Roundtable Podcast. For more information, visit npmbchurch.com.
Well, good afternoon, and thanks for tuning in to the Roundtable Podcast. The theme of today's show is Think Before You Ink. And that was thought up of by our very own Don Bandman.
I can't take the credit for it.
Oh, where did you steal that? You just...
I don't know. I saw it online, though. Somewhere at the bottom, the caption was, so think before you ink.
I think I read
that. Is it?
Some of you are very confused, and that's fine.
Thinking about we're doing a writing assignment?
Yeah, think before I write a paper. Today's topic is about tattoos, and specifically, what does it have to say about tattoos? Should a Christian get a tattoo? Are they wrong? Are they, Don's laughing, and we'll talk about that in a minute.
This is serious.
I'm already wearing my answer on my sleeve, literally. but that has come up, I've been asked that question lots, especially when I was doing young adult ministry. Parents would often ask that, or young adults would ask, you know, is it wrong for a Christian to get a tattoo? Does the Bible say anything about that? And then kind of, I guess, what we want to do practically is get it into, I guess, more of the heart issue of that, and practically what matters more, outward appearance or what's going on in your heart, and just kind of trying to get more into that, but using the whole issue of tattoos to get there, I guess. I'll tell you why this came up. Some of you may not know this, but I have a couple tattoos. One more recent. On our vacation, when we went down in June to the island for my sister's wedding, I came back and I did think before I inked, but I came back and I have Psalm 101 verse 2 on my arm, and it says, I will walk with integrity of heart. And so I got that while we were down on the island. And so kind of the story behind that, and I've shared before, either on Sunday mornings or on the podcast, struggled for years with an addiction to pornography, and just years. And I remember kind of, I'm not going to recap everything, but a verse that was very impactful was Psalm 101:2, the idea of being a man of integrity, walking with integrity of heart. And, you know, now when Molly leaves, or let's say she's taking the girl somewhere for visiting her family or something like that, she always says that to me when she leaves, you know, be a man of integrity. And so that's always been a huge, okay, yep, I want to live like that. But then getting to a place where, man, I can't do that on my own. Jesus has got to save me. And so that's kind of the story behind that tattoo, just a reminder, visual reminder to be a man of integrity. So, but as things always happen, you come back and that's a new thing. And I think just several people have been asking that question. Well, what do we believe about that? Is that bad? Is it good? Like, what am I supposed... So that's kind of where this has come up. Now, Don's going to share about his unicorn tattoo that he has on his back.
That was supposed to be a secret.
It's like a unicorn that has wings, and the wings spread out over the back. No, I'm just kidding. Don, this is your chance to come clean. Are you inked at all? Do you have any...
I am not inked at all.
This is a safe place.
Something that never even entered my mind to have a tattoo. I don't think it was even an issue. Well, that's wrong. I actually never even considered it until probably in college, where I saw other people had tattoos, and
yep.
So I didn't really even think about it, honestly. So, but I know in our family, I have 6 children. That question came up. 3 of them are gone and out of the house. And
right.
The question did come up. Hey, Dad, can we have a piercing or a tattoo? Or what do you think about that? And with us, we just made a policy that until you leave the house, no.
Yeah.
So there was the earrings and all that basic stuff. But I know especially my wife was very uncomfortable with just because of her upbringings. We just decided to make a policy that after you leave the house, you know, think about it.
Try to make
wise decisions. But if that's what you feel you want to go, then, you know, we're not going to stop you because you're on your own now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, and that, yeah, I mean, I'll share a little bit. I mean, I have 5 tattoos. This was my 5th one. And the first one, I know Don's going, oh, man, are you sure you want to?
I knew about 2 of them, but.
No, you've maybe seen. We've hot tubbed together, man. Don't you remember that?
I wasn't checking out your tattoos.
I was just looking straight ahead. Don't make eye contact.
I am a man of integrity.
But yes, got my first one my last year of high school. So when I was just about 18, and yeah, so my parents had a different. Well, it's funny when my because I'm the youngest, and so I think my parents did have the rule of like no tattoos until you leave, but they were pretty slack on.
Andrew was the golden
child. I was the golden child. No curfew. You want to get a tattoo? Sure. but yeah, I have the word disciple in Greek on my arm, and my dad actually wrote it out for me to go get it. So he was all for it. And then, yeah, in my first year of university, got a symbol for the Trinity on my other arm, and then got my second year of university, kind of the face of Jesus on my 6-pack, I wish, on my side. And then got Joshua 24:15, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord on my back. So obviously you can tell I don't have it. I don't think it's a sin or else I wouldn't have tattoos. But we'll get into kind of, you know, we joked, think before you ink. But we'll talk about that in a second. So I want to ask, so first of all, does the Bible say anything about tattoos, yay or nay?
Well, there is one verse that most people go to, and that's Leviticus 19, verse 29, I think it is. So God is giving the Israelites...
Oh, not 29.
No.
Do not profane your daughter by making her a prostitute. Nope, not that one.
28.
That's Let's for a try. Different podcast. That's
for, yeah, no kidding. But it's listed among a whole list of things that the Israelites were not supposed to practice. So 28, Leviticus 19, verse 28... It says, do not cut your bodies for the dead and do not mark your skin with tattoos. I am the Lord.
Hmm.
So we were just doing a bit of research too, and the word tattoos actually didn't even come into that verse until the 1700s. The literal meaning would be to mark or imprint your body.
Hmm.
And the reason being was that the pagan practices of the day that Israel was going into, the land there was to mark your bodies, to do all kinds of pagan rituals, to honor the dead and contact the dead. And that's what some of these other verses in front of it and around it have too. So there is one verse that talks about marking your bodies, and they've translated it as tattoos.
Yeah.
So many would say right there it says, do not mark your bodies. But then we were saying too, then are we going to do the rest of these things as well, not trim your beard and all these other things?
Yeah.
So that the motive was to cut the pagan rituals out of it. It wasn't necessarily the marking your body itself, but it was the symbols and what it meant. And that was to honor the gods, contact the dead.
Yeah. Yeah. And I even read some rituals that they would do, standing over the body of a dead and cutting their arms. And so it was connected to
And even we were talking about Elijah when he
I was gonna read that.
Fought or had that battle with the prophets on Mount Carmel. They were trying to decide who's the God. And when Elijah told the prophets of Baal, well, why don't you call your God first? And after several hours, they began slashing themselves, cutting themselves till the blood flowed.
Yeah.
And that was their practice, to try to somehow make contact with their gods. And so there we had an example of what God says, I do not want you to contact me that way or participate in any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only verse that kind of mentions tattoos or marking your body.
Yep. Yep. That's the only place in the Bible that that word is used. And like Don said, that was just kind of a recent translation, because that word just didn't exist in the within the time that this was written. And then, yeah, you see the example of the people who are worshiping Baal doing that practice where they would cut themselves. So it was very, yeah, like Don, you said, it was very connected to pagan worship and, you know, almost witchcraft type practice. Yeah, I'm going to contact this dead person or honor this dead person by cutting myself. So the issue then is when you take a verse from the Old Testament, especially one that was one of, you know, you talk about the law of the Old Testament. I mean, there's certain law that we don't do anymore. I mean, that talks about don't eat a fish with that has scales in it still. And we're like, well, I've done that before, so I broke the law. Or like there's one, you know, build a railing on the top, because roofs in that day were flat. So build a railing on your roof in case someone falls up. Well, I don't have a railing on my roof. So I think there's certain laws that you have to understand that we don't.
Ceremonial laws.
There's ceremonial laws, and then there's laws that were specific to the Israelites as they were being set apart as, you know, God's chosen people amongst all these other nations. And so, yeah, don't wear fabric made of two types of cloth, or don't plant. It was in that same one, you know, 3 years it's forbidden to eat the fruit, and then you can eat it, then the fruit is whole. So you go, okay, well, some of this, it just doesn't translate. And then you read verses like Jesus says, I've come to fulfill the law. And Christians today, we don't keep certain aspects of the law. Now, I mean, you look at the Ten Commandments, are we obligated to keep those? Yeah, because all of them are referenced in the New Testament, and yeah. Jesus kind of even raises the bar even higher than just the outward keeping of the law. And we've seen that in the Sermon on the Mount. He makes it about your heart. So I would always tell parents or young adults that were asking this or that were saying, well, look, it's wrong. I would say, but then if you're going to just say that one verse, then you have to keep all of it. And then what about the gospel? And like, doesn't Jesus free us from that? So I think you can't make an argument from Leviticus 19:28 that you shouldn't get a tattoo, just like so many other I don't want to say obscure, but so many other laws that we don't keep anymore because we're not Israel. So the other kind of, I guess, not argument, because it's not an argument. Really, the people that I've talked to about this, they're just genuinely curious. Like, what's the – because human beings, we love, like, just tell me what to do, right? Don't give me this gray area. Just tell me what to do. So even the issue of alcohol comes up lots with Christians. Is it wrong to drink? And some people don't like the gray area that exists in the Bible where it's, well, no, alcohol in and of itself isn't wrong. It's getting drunk. But some people are like, well, where's the line? It's just too gray. And so they say, no drinking at all. That's kind of the – that a lot of people have landed on. And so it's the same with this idea of tattoos, because it is this gray area. The Bible doesn't really talk about it, but there's other verses that people have pointed out to me about maybe why you shouldn't get a tattoo, or why it would be potentially sinful. The other verse that people usually quote is in 1 Corinthians, where there's a couple places where Paul talks about that your body is a temple. So 1 Corinthians 3:16, Paul says, do you not know that you are God's temple and that God's spirit dwells in you? And then 1 Corinthians 6:19-20 says, do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You are not your own, for you were bought with a price. So glorify God in your body. And then there's even 1 Corinthians 10:31 that says, basically, you know, everything we do is for the glory of God. Whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. So one of the arguments I've kind of heard is, well, when you get a tattoo or a piercing or you do that kind of thing, you know, your body is a temple. Like God, it's God's gift to you. Are you honoring your body when you do that?
Yeah.
Don? Because that's the, like, I honestly, I've heard that recently. How could you do that to your body? Like, does 1 Corinthians 6, you were bought with a price. You're supposed to honor God with your body. So is getting a tattoo dishonoring?
Well,
we got dead air here.
Yeah.
Test.
Yeah, I mean, it's I agree. I think it's more Romans 14, like on disputable issues, where Paul says, here's how that's going to play out. Some choose to work, you know, set some days apart, and some are the same. And some, it's I think it falls in that line.
Hmm.
So at the end of Romans 14, Paul gives some charges. He says, but if you have doubts about whether or not you should eat something, you are sinning if you go ahead and do it, for you are not following your convictions. If you do anything you believe is not right, you are sinning. So I guess that's where we come to again. Are we, what's the reason we're doing this? And for example, your motive to write that, to be a man of integrity, I think that falls in the category of glorifying God. Because you want to be a man of integrity, and that's your statement with that. So it falls in that 1 Corinthians 10:31. Whatever you do, do it to glorify God. And that's your motive and your desire. So I can't see how we would say, no, that's wrong.
Right.
So, but if you're doing it because you want to rebel or make a statement against authority or something, well, now you're out of bounds.
Yeah.
So have you, like any of your tattoos, have they been... would you say wrong reasons, or?
That's a really good question. I know, so I'll just kind of walk through each of them. So I know when I got in high school, you know, the word disciple in Greek, which is mathetes, on my arm, it wasn't at this place of, okay, I want to identify as a disciple of Jesus. And I don't know, it had been in that time frame where it was kind of grade. Well, I got that at the end of grade 12. So, but grade kind of 10, 11, just really wrestling with, okay, like my dad's a pastor. I go to church. Am I going to actually want to do this for myself? Like, and I remember being at a conference and hearing the gospel really clearly preached. And that's when I kind of, you know, I had said the prayer when I was five or whatever, but that's when it really like, okay, I actually believe this. So I think that came out of a place of going, no, I want to identify as a disciple of Jesus for myself. And, you know, looking back, stupid or not, that was like, I'm going to actually get it permanently on my arm. I'm a disciple of Jesus. So I think that the motive there was from a good place. I will tell you the other one on my arm, I think it was from a place of like, man, tattoos are cool. I'm going to get another one, but still wanting it to mean something, I guess. I've never been one to be like, hey, I like bears. Maybe I'll just get like a bear on me. For me, it was always like, I want it to do something with my faith and that I'm a follower of Jesus. Because on one hand, I said, I want to use these things as a way to start conversations with people and, you know, be a witness to people. So I that's why all of them have something to do with my faith. So I would say I don't think there's one that I did that was like, I'm going to get this because I want to rebel or I want attention. Yeah, I'm going to rebel and get Joshua 24:15 on my back. I mean, that one for me, it was, I wasn't married yet when I got, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. But I just said, I want that to be like, that's what I want my family. Whenever I get married and whenever I have kids, that's going to be our thing. You know, as for us, as for the EB household, we serve the Lord. And again, some could say, well, couldn't you just get that like on a plaque in your house? Why do you have to do that? So for me, it was just one of those, I mean, I want it on me. And then, yeah, this last one I've already shared. So I don't think there was ever a rebellious.
I think that's probably a pretty consistent New Testament theme. I mean, there are things that the New Testament clearly sets down, like moral law, moral integrity and all that. But then some of these disputable matters, it's a motive of the heart and where you're going with this that kind of determines whether it's right or wrong, because it like drinking, like you said, in and of itself, it's not wrong.
Exactly. Yeah.
But when you start getting drunk or you start getting careless with it, then you're going on the side of out of bounds.
Yeah. So. And I think too, like, I think it's come out of wherever we were culturally as Christians. I don't know how long ago, 20, 30, 40 years ago, where we associated, if you're a good Christian, you don't, what is it? You don't drink or chew or go with girls that do.
Yeah. Don't dance.
But I remember growing up, we were on the tail end of that. Cards are bad. You do not play cards. Like for us, the movies wasn't the issue because we went to movies, but I think my generation was on the tail end of that where it was like, well, if you're a good Christian, you don't drink or smoke or play cards or go to movies or dance. And I think I get the motive behind that because you want to be different than culture and you want to, but I go, really? Like, so if I play cards with my friends, then I don't love Jesus. And I go, that's just not true. And I think what we did is as the church, we took exterior things and then we made that kind of the litmus test of if you love Jesus or not. When really I go, is it a sin to smoke? I mean, it's not a wise decision. It's just bad for you. But in and of itself, and maybe this is way off topic, I don't think it is a sin to smoke. I think it's a bad choice. And then it gets into that whole area of, well, you're not honoring God with your body. But then I go, well, have you ever eaten a Big Mac? That's not honoring to that's not honoring to your body. So we have to be really careful when because if we're honest, we so quickly pass judgment on areas that we don't struggle with. So I've never struggled with smoking, so I can really easily look down on someone and say, well, you smoke, you clearly don't love Jesus, and yet maybe I eat terrible and I don't have any vegetables in my diet or whatever, and I just eat sugar and fat, and I'm like, is that honoring God with your body? Like, no. So I think we have to be careful when we're, and I'm saying we, like me, we're so quick to pass judgment on areas that we don't struggle with. So it's, you know, I've never had an issue with alcohol, like as far as like going too far or struggling with that. So it's very easy to look down on people and say, well, what's wrong with you? Why can't you be more like me when I have this whole other area of sin in my life? So for me, I think tattoos falls into that where it was, well, if you're a good Christian person, you just don't, you know, motorcycle gangs and criminals have tattoos and we don't do that. And I think that's the wrong litmus test for if you love Jesus, because over and over and over again, Jesus says that it's about your heart and it's about your motivations for things, why you do things. So yeah, I'm going to get a letter now saying Andrew says for smoking sure. is okay. Oh, man. I'm not saying that.
Tattoos.
Smoking. That's my – I'm just making sure you heard me. I'm not saying it's okay, but we're so quick to go sin, sin, mm-hmm. sin, sin on things that you go, well, is it really a – so I'll tell you a quick story about smoking anyways. I met with a guy that – and I won't use names or anything or where or when this happened, but it was a guy that was – possibly going to jail for an attempted murder charge, and he was meeting with me, and so he wanted to talk about it. So I was obviously scared, and we're talking about it, and then at the end, we're kind of done, and we prayed together, and he said, I'm going to go outside for a smoke, and he said, don't judge me. And I said, well, if I didn't judge you for trying to kill someone, I won't judge you for smoking. And it was one of those things that I said, and I was like, ooh, I maybe shouldn't have joked about that. But he laughed, so it was good. But it's funny, like, he's almost killed the guy, and don't judge me for smoking. I'm like, really, man? That's the least of your worries. So anyways, all that to say, it is like that idea of honoring God with your body. I think we so easily throw that around, but again, anyone who has said, well, are you honoring God with your body? I would throw it right back. Are you like, have you ever, like I said, eaten a Big Mac, drank a bottle or drank some wine? Like, is that honoring God with your body? So we have to be careful when we use that, I think.
So now I'll put you on the spot too, because you're the one in trouble here. No, like Paul says, not everything is beneficial or permissible. So people would use that there too. Yeah, okay, maybe it's fine, but is it permissible or is it beneficial? And Romans 14 is talking about not being a stumbling block. So how would you, like, obviously people are asking their parents, right? If, can I do this? Or, or, I mean, how would you walk through that if some of our youth come up to you and say, hey, Andrew, I want to get a tattoo. How would you, because your conscience is clear on that, right? And then how would you just help someone wrestle through that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Because I've even thought about that with my own daughters, because I can't really be a hypocrite and say, no, you're not allowed to get them. They're bad.
Until you're 30.
Yeah, until you're 30. Oh, but wait, Dad, don't you? So I've thought about that. And, you know, me and Molly have talked a little bit about that even, because, I mean, she was totally – I mean, she doesn't have any tattoos, and she's not against them per se, like biblically. But she I had to get her approval, right, because we're one flesh. And she was totally fine with – this because of the deep meaning that it had, as even for us as a couple, as we've walked through the damage that pornography has done in my life. So, I mean, it was so meaningful that she was like, yeah, you got to do it. So in case you're wondering if my wife is like,
she didn't know.
But you know, we've thought of that. I've thought of that with our own girls. And then, yeah, you go, so I'm a pastor, I'm the lead pastor of this church. And you go, yeah, to a certain extent, people could, well, you, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, but they look up to you, right?
They do.
They do. It's
that's
just
not bragging. That's just the fact. They do look up to
us. And so to say, well, Andrew has a tattoo, why can't I get one? So I think I would walk through it the same way that my parents did, because in and of itself, if, you know, if a young adult came to me and said, I want to get a tattoo, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. Now, a teenager who's living at home, I would say you need to obey your parents, because sure, you may want to get one, but if their rule is no, like your rule was until you leave, then that trumps that, because you're told you need to obey your parents. Now, when you're an adult and you're living off on your own, then that's a different story, I think. So I would never tell a teenager, yeah, go get one, it's cool, if parents are saying, we don't agree with it. I'd say, even if I have one, your parents trump that, because you're called by God to honor your mother and your father. So, but if a young adult came, let's say, and they were living on their own and they're whatever, 19, 20, 21, hey, Andrew, I want to get a tattoo. See, for me, I wouldn't try and talk them out of it, because I don't think there's anything inherently wrong. But I would ask them the same kind of questions my parents did. Well, why? Why do you want to get one? And if it's, well, I want to fit in or I want to be cool, I would go, I think your motivations are wrong. And then I would ask, what do you want to get? Well, and again, if it's, well, I want to get a rainbow or I want to get a koala bear. I don't know. I'm just trying to pull out random things. Sorry if you're listening and you have a koala bear tattoo. But I would ask about what's the meaning or the significance of what you want. Like, what's the story? Like, why? And so I think if it's at a place where they go, you know, here's the meaning behind it. This is why I want to get it. And if it's for a good reason, and it's and it comes out of a place of significance for them, then I would have no issue saying go for it. But again, you have to say, like, you know, we joke, think before you ink, but honestly think, because it, I mean, to tell them, listen, this is something that's permanent-ish. If you want to pay big bucks and go get it removed, fine. But it's permanent. And, you know, 20 years from now, are you going to want that same thing on you? So just to use wisdom. So again, just because I have tattoos, it's not like, woohoo, whatever you want. It is still like to use wisdom. If you're living at home, to obey your parents and to honor them, whatever their decision is about that. And then, if you have thought about it, then I would say I have no issue with you getting one. So I'll give you the example of my sister. For years, she wanted to get like a Nike swoosh on her ankle. She liked how it looked, and it was so cool. And to her, that was the thing. It was just so cool. It's such a cool thing. I love Nike. And she never did it. And looking back now, she goes, man, that was so dumb. Why did I want to? But for her, she talked about it with my parents. She actually like drew it on with marker to like see what it would look like. She, my parents weighed in. She asked her friends. She thought about it. She delayed. It wasn't just like a, hey, guys, we're going to get tattoos. Let's go do it. And she didn't get it. And thankfully she didn't, because she's like, that was so dumb. Why did I want that? So again, it, to use wisdom and to not just get them for the wrong reasons, yeah. I guess.
Well, will it glorify God? Where's the focus point of this tattoo? What are people going to be looking at?
Yeah.
Especially the females. Where the tattoos are. Now we're looking at your forearm there. It's could be a stumbling block because the muscles are there.
Oh, I didn't think about that. I'll have to stop working out, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's the theme of the New Testament, to weigh the motives and the reasons why we're doing it. And like Andrew said, an important thing as a young person is how, your parents, what's their position on that, because that's honoring God too. If they're not comfortable with it, then that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
But in and of itself.
Yeah, and I think that's neat, because like you set that rule and your kids so far have honored that until they've moved out, kind of thing. And see, for me, for my parents, we talked about it and that wasn't a rule for me. So it wasn't as if I was rebelling against my dad's handwriting on my arm. So I think it is, like, that's what I would say. And I think that's one of the comments and one of the worries. Well, you're the lead pastor. You're setting an example for people. But for me, I go, yeah, but your kids obey you, not me. Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like I would never tell kids, yeah, let's rebel and go get one, even if your parents say no. Like, because the Bible's so clear, as your kids honor and respect and obey their parents. Not to just be so, I am not like willy-nilly about it or anything like that. And I've had to think through, oh man, our own rule for our own girls, 30. I think 30 is going to be the age that we, but yeah, I think as far as, I was telling Don before we started, this wasn't meant to be a defense of like, Andrew must have gotten hundreds of letters about his tattoo. That's not it at all. But I think when I came back from vacation, it just, people are just curious, I think, going, what do we think about that? Like, I don't know. Biblically, what do I think? And so I think, Don, you've already said it, in the New Testament, Jesus, and we worked through the Sermon on the Mount for months, but it's so much about your heart and your motivations for doing things. Because I think someone on the outside, and I mean, this was the Pharisees, the outside looked great and they kind of checked all the boxes, but what is it? Jesus condemned them and said, your hearts are wicked. So I think we have to be careful, excuse me, when we on the outside we're checking all the boxes for Jesus, and yet inside, do we really love him? And so I think that's why Jesus goes after our hearts and our motivations for doing things. And, the why, not just what we're doing, but why are we doing them? And I was reminded even of Mark 7, and this has to do with food, not with tattoos, but it's kind of interesting what Jesus says, because the Pharisees constantly hounded Jesus about, well, you're breaking this ceremonial law and you're breaking this one. And he says, and he called the people to him again and said to them, hear me, all of you, and understand. There's nothing outside a person that by going into him can defile him, but the things that come out of a person are what defile him. So this is about eating and ceremonial traditions and stuff like that. And then Jesus says, and it says later on, thus he declared all food clean. And he said, what comes out of a person is what defiles him. For from within, out of the heart of man, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these things come from within, and they defile a person. So it was almost, I know that has to do with food, but Jesus was kind of getting at, you keep these food laws, and you think that, oh yeah, I'm undefiled because I haven't eaten pork or whatever it is. And Jesus is saying, actually, it's what comes out of you, out of your heart, is what defiles you, and not what you eat. So you could kind of make a similar argument with some of these things that are the outward appearance that it's, I don't think that's what defiles you. It's what comes out of your heart and your motivations and what your affections are. Are they for Jesus or are they for other things? So there you go. Got anything else?
Like our second topic kind of thing?
I guess. Or what do you mean? Or any closing thoughts on...
Well, I think this is going to be a topic where we're going to agree to disagree with people.
Yes.
And so I think if there are concerns or questions, like, please come and talk to like Andrew especially. And to talk about it, because there's a chance here. And Paul warns us in Romans 14, like verse 12, that we don't condemn each other. We don't let these things divide us. So rather come and or email questions or whatever concerns to talk about it, and not to let these things turn into things that never needed to be turned into. Yeah. So
that's a good point. Yeah, so that's don@npmbchurch.com. No, I'm just kidding.
I'll take those questions about tattoos.
But that's a good point that, we don't want – and it goes with any type of issue that it's much better to bring it into the open and into the light and talk about it and not just let it fester whatever with anybody, not just to me, any other follower of Jesus. That's what we're called to do. So I don't know, Don, it's 35 minutes. Do you want to just answer? We had another question come in about, let's just do it. We had another question come in that came in with the ghost one, and I don't really know how it was worded, right? But basically it was asking, you know, what does it mean to have like childlike faith, or what does the Bible say about, you know, faith like a child? And there was just some confusion, I guess, about what exactly does that mean? And so I know you're looking up the Matthew 18 one, right? Or the Mark 10?
Mark 10.
Okay, so there's two spots that Jesus talks about this. Why don't you look up the Mark 10, and then I'll look up the Matthew 18, that Jesus kind of mentions the childlike – actually, he never says childlike faith, but he talks about uses the example of children. So,
and I think the question was, there was a little bit of, not necessarily disagreement, but just wondering, what does he mean by being childlike or become like a child? Like Jesus said, unless you become like a child, you're not going to – we should read that wording, but – well, you're not going to enter the kingdom of heaven, is what he said. So now some of us could go, well, like a child is kind of maybe a brat sometimes, or exactly what does that mean for us as even adults? So
Matthew 18, this is the context. It says verse 1, at that time the disciples came to Jesus saying, who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And calling to him a child, he put him in the midst of them and said, truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And then he says, whoever receives one such child in my name receives me, but whoever causes one of these little ones who believes in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea.
Yikes,
Jesus. And then Mark 10 is the other instant.
And that's where the disciples were having Jesus teach them, and then the parents were bringing their children to Jesus, and the disciples were scolding them and telling the parents, like, let's not bother the teacher, get these kids away.
Yeah.
And then it says when Jesus saw what was happening, he was angry with his disciple, and he said, let the little children come to me, do not stop them, for the kingdom of God belongs to those who are like these children. So I tell you the truth, anyone who doesn't receive the kingdom of God like a child will never enter it. So he makes a very strong point there. And then he took the children in his arms and he placed his hands on their heads and blessed them. I know I'm studying for an upcoming sermon in Matthew, which we've been going through, Matthew 11, verse 25 and 24, Jesus is kind of at a place where he's summarizing what's been going on. And it says, Jesus prayed this prayer, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, thank you for hiding these things that he's been teaching from those who think themselves wise and clever and for revealing them to the childlike. Yes, Father, it pleased you to do it this way. So there's kind of another reference to the childlike. And so I think that question came up, what does that exactly mean?
Yeah.
But I think it is referring to a humility
mm-hmm.
and a trust that children have. I know I was thinking about this as an example. When I was 5, 6, 7 years old, we had cattle in a big pasture, and we'd go through the trees and looking for cattle, and we would follow our dad. And I just remember, like, you know, there's potential danger out there, but because dad was yeah. in front of us,
yeah.
there was no fear at all.
Yeah.
And so I know that was a childlike faith where there's nothing to worry about. Dad's here.
Yeah.
I know now as a dad, my kids do the same thing, but I'm going now, there must have been some sketchy times because I'm not always so confident that this is going to work out, but they don't care because yep. dad's here.
Yep. Yep.
So I think that's one way to look at it. The childlike are those that will receive the teaching of Jesus and choose to follow him, whereas the opposite in that one section was the teachers of the law, the Pharisees. They were the wise and clever who said, no, I don't think so. I'm not going to follow Jesus. And they did not heed his teachings.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't follow him. And so he said they wouldn't enter the kingdom of God with that attitude.
Yeah.
So I think it was an issue of the humility and the willingness to follow as opposed to the pride. I'm going to do it my way.
Yeah.
Because this is how it looks. So I'm not sure what that.
Yeah, Matthew, I think that. The Matthew 18 is the same because the context is the disciples are arguing about who's right. the greatest. And so you go, well, yeah, Jesus is clearly talking about humility because he says, like, unless you become like children, you'll never enter. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest. So yeah, you can see the disciples arguing about who's going to be the greatest. And Jesus uses the example of a child saying, you have to be, whoever's humble is the greatest in the kingdom. So he kind of flips it up on its head of what you would think. You go, really? Like someone like a kid who's, you know, who's mm-hmm. this humble little tiny kid, he's the greatest? Like, but you would think it would be the guy with the best resume and the mm-hmm. most education, and Jesus totally flips it. So I think, yeah, it has to do with, again, it's not about being childish, like naive and, like you said, acting like brats because we're told elsewhere in the Bible that we're supposed to mature and not stay little children. Paul talks about that. You know, we're not supposed to just drink milk our whole lives. We're supposed to learn how to feed ourselves and grow up. But I think when he talks about, you know, faith, well, it doesn't even say faith. It's just being like children in the Matthew passage. I think it has to do with humility and, like you said, trust, because I remember reading in John Eldred's, one of his books, Wild at Heart or whatever the other one was, when he had a little boy, his little boy somehow made it up onto the roof of their house and the mom is like freaking out and the dad says, jump, I'll catch you. And the mom was like, no, don't do it. And the boy just, again, with this trust, of course dad will catch me. And I'm sure he's like, oh, dear Lord, please help me catch him. But it was, again, that simple trust, and the kid didn't overthink it. He just said, of course my dad will catch me. And we've seen that even with our girls. You know, it's funny. I just went home for lunch, and Lucy was talking, and it kind of made me, you know, puff my chest up a little bit. Lucy was talking to mom. Mama, do you know daddy can fix anything? And I was just like, yeah. Oh, yeah. But it was just that simple, like, it's daddy. Like, yeah. Just a trust of daddy can fix it. He can do everything. And so I think that's where Jesus is getting at. Not that we stay childish, but we just always have that, whether it's a childlike wonder or humility or just awe of how big God is. Because, yeah, you're right. He's comparing the Pharisees mm-hmm. who they were, you know, in worldly standards wise, and they totally missed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a real challenge for us, because as we get older and life kind of hits us, we get pretty crusty and we get independent.
That's a good way.
And we lose that childlike faith. Like, I remember when I became a Christian at 10 years old, it was, you know, the childlike faith. Like, I just believed that Jesus was who he said he was. Mm-hmm. And I remember just doing things, walking home in the dark and just no fear because Jesus is here. But we lose that as we life hits us, and sometimes disappointments and other things hit us, and we lose the childlike faith, that humble trust in God, and we start wanting to see something first before we step out in faith, or we just start living life our own way, and we start losing the joy of having that intimate relationship with him because we don't have that childlike faith anymore. So I was thinking that is actually a real challenge for us as we move along in our faith to keep that childlike faith. Because Jesus said, without it, you won't even see the kingdom of God because you tend to move away from trusting Jesus. And I'm going to do this my way, which was what the Pharisees said. I know the Messiah is going to be like this, and this Jesus is a fraud. I'm not going to trust him.
Yeah,
I'm going to do it my way. And he said, you're going to head off into destruction. You're heading down the wrong road.
So how do you get that back? You know what I mean? If you're someone who's like, I'm just totally throwing this. You didn't know I was going to ask that. But if
that is a question I've been asking.
Yeah, how do you recover that? Or are there things that you can do to, okay, I got to get that back, that just humility and awe and trust of.
I think one of the things for me is constantly in the area of sinning and making mistakes. I want to try to fix it myself or do things on my own, whereas the childlike faith, I think, is coming right to Jesus and say, you know, I had a lustful thought, or I thought very evil thoughts of that person because I didn't like what they said, or or whatever. And I find myself wanting to fix it my own way when the Bible clearly says how to fix it. In that humble childlike faith is coming right to the Savior, confessing my sins and dealing with it. And I think other ways is just asking God to show me who he is, like just to be honest too, that I'm just scratching the surface of who God is in his word, and he needs to teach me. And I think that's one way. When I do that, I find it's an intimate relationship then, because it's in the right place.
Yeah.
God and I are not equals. So those are a couple ways for myself to keep that childlike faith and definitely being obedient. I know when I see God's word and I'm obedient, that's when I'm in a good place. I'm having that childlike faith. When I'm choosing to do what God wants me to do kind of on my own terms, then I'm losing that childlike faith because now I'm in the driver's seat again. It's this constant... And it's a regular thing where I have to keep putting Jesus back in the driver's seat and take my hands off the wheel and trust he's going to lead me through this life into eternity. And so it's a constant thing we have to visit.
Yeah. No, that's it. I would agree. And then, sometimes I have to, as I read and do study, you almost have to... you know, read it through the eyes of a lost person or a kid. Because I've shared this before on Sunday morning. Sometimes we read about stuff that Jesus is doing. Yeah, okay, yep. And then he like touched her and she was raised from the dead. Okay, yep. And it's like, what? Like, that would be great. Like, I think about when I tell stories to my girls, they're like, what? Did that actually happen? And like, it's just awe of, what? He walked on water? Like, that's crazy. even daddy can't do that. And so it's been good, like us going down to the dam and doing some Bible studies with, you know, non-Christian people, and then having kids, like just to regain that sense of when you read, not to just, I've heard it before, and but to just like slow down and remind yourself, like, that's pretty incredible. The things that Jesus does, and the gospel, and just stories in the Bible, is not to just sounds good. But to go back and like a kid would, hearing these stories, being like, what? So that's been helpful for me in the past little bit. So I think that's good. 48 minutes, 49 minutes, we've solved all the issues. So hopefully that's been helpful. Just to, yeah, remind ourselves of different questions we might have, or to just go back to the Word and what's of most importance. And so, like Don said, if you do have questions or things that you're going, well, you didn't quite answer that, or follow-up questions, totally email us or call the church office. And yeah, we would love to talk more with you about that. So God bless, and we will talk to you next week.